Welcome to the Project Zion podcast. This podcast explores the unique spiritual and theological gifts Community of Christ offers for today's world.
Hello and welcome to Project Zion podcast. This is your host, Robin Linkhart, and today's episode is dedicated to the 20th anniversary of a name change. The day the reorganized Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints became known to the world as Community of Christ. To tell us the story of that journey, we welcome two very special guests, Danny Belrose and Ken McLaughlin. Danny A. Belrose is an amateur poet and artist. He holds a Master of Theology degree and a Doctor of Ministry degree from St. Stephen's College in Edmonton, Alberta, Canada, and is the author of Let the Spirit Breathe, Wave Offerings, Vulnerable to Grace, Portraits, Profiles, and Prayers, and several hymn texts in Community of Christ Sings hymnal published in 2013. Prior to church appointment in 1981, Danny was employed with the Hudson's Bay Company of Canada as Assistant Advertisement Manager in Toronto, Advertisement Manager in Regina, Saskatchewan, and Special Events Manager in Winnipeg, Manitoba. Danny was ordained a President of 70 in 1992, member of the Council of 12 Apostles in 1994, and as presiding evangelist in 2000. A native of Sarnia, Ontario, Canada, Danny lives in Independence, Missouri with his wife, Penelope. They are parents, grandparents, and great-grandparents. Their three daughters, Beth Morden, deceased, Carrie Peter, and Heather Moore, reside in Canada. Kenneth L. McLaughlin, a native of Columbus, Ohio, has been a member of the Community of Christ for over 60 years and an ordained minister for over 50. He has served the church in almost every local leadership position, as well as a mission center president and financial officer. Ken holds a Bachelor of Science in Education degree from Ohio State, a Master of Arts in Religion from Park University, and a Juris Doctorate from the Moritz College of Law at Ohio State. His professional career includes teaching at the high school level and as an adjunct at the university level, as an assistant attorney general of Ohio, an administrative law judge, and for almost 25 years as a full-time minister with Community of Christ. He was called into the Council of 12 Apostles in 1994. Following retirement, Ken served as a professional fundraiser and consultant. He has been married 44 years to Dr. Suzanne Truitt, currently on staff at Rockhurst University. They have two adult children and four grandchildren. Welcome, Ken and Danny. We're so happy to have you with us today.
Thank you, Robin.
Great to be here. Appreciate it.
All righty. Well, before we dive into our topic today, I want to give our listeners a chance to get to know you both just a little bit better. And of course, one or two juicy tidbits are always welcome here at Project Zion Podcast. So, Danny, why don't you start us off?
Juicy tidbits. I'm not sure I can provide too many juicy ones. You mentioned the fact that my family was in Canada and I am a dual citizen, making it much difficult to get home to see the kids right now because of the COVID situation. Let's see. I'm both a serious person and a not serious person. And I guess I would say that I use my humor in many respects as a way to get to know people and people get to know me. I also use it as a bit of a shield, to be frank about it. If you want to lay me on the couch and do some analysis, it also protects me at times from people getting too close and knowing too much. So that's all I'm going to say right now. No, I've enjoyed my ministry in the church and I'm looking forward to this interview. I don't know if I can give you any juicy stuff or not. That may come later. Don't be disappointed. I can give you some stuff, particularly on Ken.
I bet you can. That'll work just fine for now, though, Danny. Thank you. Ken.
Well, it is true, Robin, that Danny and his wife, Penelope, and my wife, Sue, and myself are traveling companions. We have been traveling nationally and internationally together on various vacations. We've missed doing that a great deal, but we do have a little October trip to the Gulf Coast planned in Florida, which will be fun. And our most momentous single 24-hour period traveling was when several of us, I won't say who, had a wicked 24-hour virus while visiting in Yellowstone and the surrounding areas there. Danny would not like me to give the details of that.
No, that's a juicy story that we don't want to go into. Ken.
It's really just too much for the podcast.
It is.
All right. Well, thank you so much. And I know our listeners are really appreciating this little tiny window of getting to know you just a bit better. So as I mentioned in our opener, this episode commemorates the 20th anniversary of the name Community of Christ. We're actually recording this interview in March of 2021, and this episode will post next month on April 6th, the 20-year anniversary to the day that our name, Community of Christ, became official. The official legislative action took place roughly a year before that, but it was a much longer journey that some might think, when would this ever happen? Both of you had a front row seat in the Council of 12 for significant portions of that adventure. So let's start with this question. When did the first rumblings of things like maybe we should think about a different name begin to emerge? And from your perspective, why was that even a question? Ken, you want to start first on that question?
I think, Robin, that the rumblings began before any of us were together for a larger rumbling, if you will, to keep that language in play. I think a lot of folks that were around the tables of leadership at that time had sensed for a good number of years that there was a certain inadequacy to the name Reorganized Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. It had served us well, but somehow as our emerging understanding of God's call to the church became clearer, it was, at least in my mind, I will speak for myself at this point, at least in my mind, it was time for something that made more sense for the era in which we live. I do recall saying at some of the meetings farther down the road that I hope someday some brave group of women and men will also, if need be, change the name from Community of Christ to something else, if that is more fitting for where the church is on its journey. My personal rumbling began at the corner of 22nd and Reinhardt in Columbus, Ohio, in front of the South Columbus, Ohio church that I attended as a child and teenager. It was a strong, large congregation. On the front of that brick building was what I believe was a bronze-looking plaque with the name of the church on it, Reorganized Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. I remember at a pretty young age looking at that, shaking my head and thinking there's got to be a better way to identify ourselves than something that sounds like it was concocted through not being able to get the name we really wanted or something like that. And even as a kid, Latter-day Saints just didn't mean anything to me. It eventually came to mean dispensationalism, which was nothing that the church was associated with anymore. And so I guess that would be my personal experience. And I didn't hesitate in Council of 12 sessions and in formal or informal sessions of leaders to talk about the need for us to address that at the right time.
I think I would add to that, Ken and Robin, that this was not a top-down issue, really, in my perspective. The rumbling began a long time ago. I think there were people who were always really a little off guard when they would give the name of the church, and then it would be immediately identified as our cousins out west in Utah. And I can remember going to a retreat. Now, this would be back probably in 1979, somewhere in there, retreat and up in Canada, where I was living. And Ruby Ward, I don't know if you'd ever, I guess you wouldn't have met Ruby. Ruby is a wonderful gal. I was at this retreat, and Ruby came to me. It was just on the, we were moving up to one of the conferences. And she said, Danny, she said, I'm going to put a motion in to change the name of the church. I said, oh, that's interesting, Ruby. Will you support that? I said, well, what name did you have in mind? And she gave me a name. I can't recall what it was. It was a new name, but no question about that. I said, well, Ruby, when you give that name, are you expecting people to say, well, I've never heard of that church. Who are you? Well, we used to be the Reorganized Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And I thought, so how do we respond even if the church's name is changed? And I was quite frankly in favor of a change of the church's name even back then and earlier. But I remember Ruby smiling at me saying, well, that's a good point. Another little added, maybe not juicy thing, but Ken mentioned our travel together. Was it Nova Scotia, Ken, that we stayed overnight in a home?
Yes.
And we were at the morning breakfast, that last morning that we were there, the hostess came and she said, well, would you sign our book here, my welcome book? I have everybody sign that book. We had ministers here last weekend, and one of them wrote me a poem. And I said, well, we happen to be ministers as well, but we're not going to write you a poem. Well, she said, what church? And I smiled and said, the Community of Christ. Oh, and she said, Mormon? and this was in Nova Scotia, wasn't it, Ken? Am I right on that?
Yeah,
I think it was Nova Scotia. Right. Well, we don't have much of a presence in Nova Scotia, but going from Community of Christ to Mormon, the same response that we were given earlier. And I remember coming back from that trip, and I walked into Wally, President Smith's office, and I told him the anecdote, this little story. And he looked up at me and said, well, back to the drawing board.
Oh. You know, Robin, I might add to that, too, that and we'll get to this later in the podcast, I think. But I remember that even as for myself in 1977, 78, 79, about in that era, I thought that the name we would probably land on was Saints Church. Hmm. That would simply be a two-word name. And Community of Christ had certainly not entered my mind. And I would say many of the rumblings did not necessarily have a name attached to it. Sure. Danny, would you say the same?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just a sense of no fit or something that needed to be changed. People just wanting that. So I think it was more of a bottom up. Certainly the official leaders made response to that. But I think it was current even in the minds of many people way before it was considered officially.
Very interesting. So we know that leadership brought this to the conference, a world conference in 2000, but there were events that led up to that. So tell us about those years preceding 2000 when we've heard you talk about how personally and as a community across the globe that there were rumblings and conversations about this many, many, many years before 2000. When did it really bubble up to the leading quorums of the church, and what were the events that brought us to the year 2000?
Well, Ken, give us a quick thumbnail sketch of Estes Park, because I think that's the occasion where it really became an item of consideration in an official way.
Yeah, Robin, one of the highlights for me during my entire tenure in the Council of 12 and in World Church leadership at the Mission Center level and at the denomination level had to be what I would call the Estes Park experience. I wish I could give you a precise year for that. I don't keep a diary in that sense. And maybe your research has turned up what that year would be. I don't know, or maybe Danny knows it off the top. But he and I were among the less senior members of the Council of 12. And it was like all of the times in which I served as in the council, it was a very congenial time. Even those who held different views from myself, we found a way to have lovely camaraderie. And we also had, because of the luxury of a bit larger budget than now constrains the church, we went to the YMCA of the Rockies, which is just outside Estes Park, not far, Robin, from where you have lived for quite a long time, and just a magnificent spot. It's one of the few places I've been told where there's a lot of open land and you can look every direction and see the Rocky Mountains. And so we were in that experience. Danny, help me with my recollection. I believe that there, among a normal agenda that the World Church leaders would handle, there were also two items there that were one which was quite a part of the agenda, and one which was much more serendipitous in its exploration. And the first one was trying to see if we could come to some consensus on a new mission statement for the church. Mission statements were kind of a big deal then. And the one that the church had been using was incredibly wordy. It was beautifully done, but it was not memorizable. It was not concise and clean and precise. And it required much too high of an educational level in order to explore it. And so that was in play, but also, and that I believe more a part of the agenda, but also at play then was, is this the appropriate time then to talk right in the same breath as that, as what a name change might be in terms of its timeliness and what the words themselves actually might be. We laughed a lot that week. We're assigned roommates. I remember that Alex Catawba, the president of the Council of 12, was mine. We just had a great time there as well. And so when we began the discussions of what a mission center might be, I felt strongly that the role I could play was to constantly remind my colleagues that whatever we came up with had to be memorizable, mm-hmm. and by a group of Sunday school children standing up in front of the congregation, 6-year-olds, 7-year-olds, saying what this mission statement was if their diligent Sunday school teacher wanted to have them memorize it. And that was just something that I remember saying over and over again in the course of the discussion. That's too long. That's too complicated. Our identity should be able to be concisely contained in a few words. And so I'll let Danny kind of inject here. This was towards the beginning of the week with some pretty intense sessions around that before we moved into the more serendipitous time of church name change.
Danny, yeah. Yeah, I would agree that the name change itself of the church was really serendipitous. I think it kind of rode on the discussion that you just had about the mission statement. And as I recall, it was in the evening that we discussed that came to the surface and we began to talk about the possibility of looking at a name change. Now, just to swing up, I want you to know, Robin, just how holy this weekend was. Ken has mentioned that we had a good time and laughed a lot. There was another business group in the next room over from us, and you could hear the music they were playing occasionally. They were, I don't know what they were, but they were playing various music items. And during the time when we were considering calls to the priesthood, next door broke out with YMCA, and two of the apostles who will remain nameless began to do the YMCA motions and everyone, most of them joined in. I don't know if Wally knew all the words or not, but everybody joined in, had a good laugh. But going back to the name, it was serendipitous. I remember that as we kind of rolled around with possibilities. And it was a good time to do that in that kind of atmosphere. Yes, it was an important decision to make. But I do recall that when Wally, when President Smith said, what about Community of Christ? And it just rolled out, and we just jumped on that, as I recall. I think Norm presiding bishop, went out immediately, as I recall, and you can correct me on this, Ken, went out immediately to see if he could secure the rights for that name if it was possibly used. Do you recall that?
I think that's correct. And I think, Danny, that you're right. It was in one of our evening sessions. We did have the Raucous group next door that actually provided us a good service through Comic Relief, even though that was not their aim. My guess would be they might have had some liquid adult refreshments that were helping them along the way. Yeah. And while that was going on, it's true that President Smith, Wally, was the first one to put the words together, but they didn't all just come from him. It came from different people in the room putting together combinations of words. And Wally was very actively engaged in this. He was not just letting, and he was participating not so much in a hierarchical leadership fashion as struggling with a group of people to help give birth to something together. And the same thing was true earlier in the week when we finally came up with the words proclaim and promote in order to be more memorizable and to also feed off the communities of joy initiatives going on in the church. And then playing off of the Advent themes every year of joy, hope, love, and peace. They rotate in order every year. Those of you that are not familiar with the Revised Common Lectionary, it's not joy, hope, love, and peace every Advent season, which makes it, I think, wonderful from a worship perspective. But when we finally had joy, hope, love, and peace, and communities of joy, and when all that got linked to proclaiming and promoting, we were, I'm going to use the term, we were on a spiritual roll.
Yes.
And that's when we went ahead and had, I don't know if it was the next evening session, but later in the week, the more serious session broken up by the fun next door, where we went on to the name change issue.
Yeah. Even though there was, as Ken and I had said, there was certainly a lot of laughter and companionship there, camaraderie of colleagues. But and I don't want to over declare this or make it too mystical, but I remember being very struck when Wally did finally say Community of Christ. And this is just my recollection, but it seems to me that we went silent at that moment. Just, you know, good discussion going on, and suddenly he comes out with Community of Christ. And I remember there's just a sense of silence there for a moment as we got a hold of that. And I don't want to over dramatize that, but that was how I felt at the moment, that there was more to this than just discussion, shall we say. As Ken said, we were moved to a point where I think we were struggling, and yet there was a sense of relief, if you will, when that name kind of rolled out.
Yep. Robin, what was going on for me in the background of all this, I don't mind sharing this at all, but Danny and I do both write hymn texts. And actually in the new book, I actually have a hymn tune, which I'm very proud of because I never thought I would author or compose a tune as well. Some hymn text writers work from the words and then move into what text fits it. That's often what Danny does. I'm the reverse of that. I have a tune in my head, and I write to the tune, the meter of the tune. And so I already knew that I wanted to write something to Darwell's 148th, which is the name of the tune that goes la 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 rum, ba, rum, bum, bum, bum. So that was already in my mind. And all week after we had come up with, starting at about, Danny, I'm going to say Tuesdays, maybe when the mission statement finally had gelled, I went right to work putting together a community of joy, which is the name of the hymn that I wrote. And I wrote the first four verses, not to perfection, but very close, while at Estes Park. Because I remember saying to Alex Catawba, my roommate that week, I remember saying to him, Alex, I need a two-syllable word that says, and then whatever the phrase was that I was hung up on. And he went and did something else, and he came back with a four-syllable word. And I went, Alex, you don't understand. We're writing a hymn tune to a meter here. You have two syllables to work with and nothing more. And he goes, well, then I got nothing for you. And so the first four verses of that five-verse hymn were written there at Estes Park. And the fifth verse was written during the World Conference where the name change was approved.
Yeah.
So that's a bit of history on that, Tim. It's 6:31 in Community of Christ Sings.
Yeah. Just a correction, Ken.
Yes.
I do almost what you do. I write to the melody first. But one of my hymns, a Christmas hymn.
It's number 430 in the Community of Christ Sings. It's my favorite of all of the work that Danny and I have done. And combined, the two of us have written probably 80 or so hymn texts, even though the church hasn't seen all of those. But he's exactly right. This Christmas carol is properly called In a Stable Wrapped in Starlight. And so it often gets overlooked. But if Danny, God forbid, dies around Christmas time or myself, that's going to be at the memorial, sir.
Well, I'm glad you brought up hymnody because we're going to talk about that a little bit later on. So we're hearing some eyewitness accounts of this gathering of world church leaders in Estes Park. My records show that that happened in September 1994. So you two had been on the Council of 12 for about 5 months.
Yeah, we were the young guys, I think, at that
time. Yeah.
You, Ken, and
Dale Luffman.
Luffman, yeah, right.
Yeah, and the mission statement that was finished when you left Estes Park, is that correct?
I think pretty much, yeah.
And that was, we proclaim Jesus Christ and promote communities of joy, hope, love, and peace. Easy to memorize and very, very meaningful to the life of the church. So that was
Robin, I think it was helpful for its day. I think it's slowly becoming replaced with Christ's mission, our mission, which is terrific. Four words.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is wonderful. And two of the words repeat. Yeah. And so, yeah, kudos to the leaders who put that together after us.
I'm thinking, and I may be jumping ahead, Robin, a little bit. When we were working with the PR group that was helping design the name of the church with a proper font, or at least a font they were suggesting, they were quite, I think they were, but maybe it was from our side as well, they were at one point eager to have a tagline. Do you remember that, Ken?
To Zion for All.
Yeah, and it didn't really go over well. I mean, it just didn't fit, recognizing the various interpretations, modern interpretations, understanding the word Zion.
Right.
And eventually we came down on that by saying, no, we don't want a tagline. We'll just leave it Community of Christ. And so,
yes, the simplicity and power of three words. So we go from 1994, we come out with a mission statement. And 6 years later, we're at World Conference 2000. Is there anything that happened in between during that interim time that helps bring us to that World Conference?
Well, I guess I'm thinking of the resource I think you mentioned when you were chatting on the phone with me. Called by a New Name, I think that was produced during that period of time, where there were various groups, committees, whatever. I think, Ken, you may have been in charge of the one committee, were you not?
Well, and this is where it gets fuzzy for me, Robin. Yeah. And I think the reason for that is I believe that a lot of what was in that four-year interim was in the hands of the first presidency and not the Council of 12. My guess would be you would have to talk to the members of the presidency of that era. Perhaps there was a bit of apprehension or trying to discern the right time. Perhaps the three of them were not in complete accord as to some piece of this. I do not know, and I have never asked, to be candid. So even though these gentlemen are still alive and would probably share what they felt could be disclosed publicly, I don't know. Danny, do you know?
No, I don't. No, I don't really.
So we do know, I believe at World Conference 1998, we had some resolutions from the floor having to do with the name change. So it was beginning to bubble up from the membership. And going into World Conference 2000, my memory does not reveal to me in the moment whether or not we knew ahead of time that that was going to come to the conference. And I don't recall that we did. So we're at World Conference 2000 and it is brought to the body. How would you all describe the journey of the people of the church as we wrestled with the possibility of changing our name? And of course, the legislative body did take that under consideration and vote as to whether or not we were going to do that. So your experience at that conference as you witnessed the proceedings, the conversation and dialogue and the vote, and then walking out of that world conference and beginning to live into the reality that we would begin to prepare for this to happen.
Well, Kenna, you may want to correct me because my memory on this is a bit foggy as well. I don't recall it being a controversial issue, a heated issue, let's put it that way, because we've had those kinds of discussions, and that's who we are as a people, to agree and disagree and to somehow come together in terms of either faithful disagreement or otherwise. But I don't recall it being a particularly hot issue, I guess best I could say. I mean, I felt personally very good about it, and but I don't recall, again, any great animosity that was risen. There were some who were opposed, certainly, want to hold on to what they think is the name of the church, quote unquote. Can you have any?
I have some memories, and it's difficult sometimes to hang on to memories of World Conference because it passes as a blur more than I would have ever guessed once I became a general officer of the church. I do recall, Robin, that prior to 2000, from 1994 to 1999, I had an assignment that was the only international piece of it was the state of Hawaii, and everything else was in the South Pacific Islands and other nations. Lots of talk at reunions and seminars and large events, the kinds of which the apostle would often make an appearance at. And so there was a lot of back and forth in people's homes, you know, on the floor of various conferences. The very progressive Australia Church that was more than willing to change the name years before. The very small church in New Zealand where the word community had a bit of a pejorative ring to it. The folks in Tahiti, who of course are communal by their very culture, and who love the fact that the church's name could be translated into not only French easily and literally community of Christ, but could also be translated easily into Tahitian, which is a non-conceptual, non-sophisticated current language in the world, but it still worked beautifully there. So a lot of that was going on in the background. And then Danny's correct. When we actually got to the World Conference, I do recall, we can check the World Conference minutes if we need to, that it was not going to be a 50% plus one vote, that it needed to pass by a larger majority in order. And I think it was 2/3. That's my recollection. And so I remember talking with our house guests during World Conference and with my wife that morning. I said, I believe that this will become a conference resolution that passes by the required vote, but it will not be without folks giving their views, saying that we need to retain the current identity of the church. President Sheehy, Bud Sheehy, did make a statement which he made since as well. I don't know if he chose to make it strictly because it was his personal view, which I believe it was, but also because he felt it would be a pastoral statement to make. And that is, he said, I'm paraphrasing, I will always be a member of the community of the Reorganized Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, but my children and grandchildren will be members of the community of Christ. It was a lovely way to show a bridge. And I remember the part that I added to that was that I really did wake up in the middle of the night. I don't want to get unduly mystical or magical. There is a difference with the two of you and with the listening audience. But I woke up at about 4 o'clock in the morning, which is not something I did when I was at that age, just restless and trying to figure out if there was anything that I could share that would help people. And so I simply had the privilege of speaking. Those on the rostrum at that time, anyway, parliamentarily, did have priority in speaking. And I was so grateful that there were people who came to me afterwards that I knew and did not know, who said, your words were very helpful to me personally. Thank you. That was just my little piece of perspective and added a witness, if you will, to my belief that the appropriate name had been chosen in quite a moment of birthing and euphoria, both in a setting that couldn't be more beautiful, frankly, to be in. So I think, Danny, considering we didn't talk before this interview at all, our views, our remembrances were pretty much the same at that point. And that is, yeah. Robin, that's when I wrote that last verse of the hymn.
Oh, I love it. I love that. That was my first World Conference as an adult. My mother went when I was a child. And Roy Schaefer, who at one time was in the Council of 12, babysat me while Marilyn and my mom went over to conference. That was the closest I'd gotten to World Conference until 1998. And I do profoundly remember Bud Sheehy's remark. And there was a sense of comfort that was felt across the chamber because it did bridge. And those World Church officers like yourself, Ken, that spoke to that item, that was very important to the body. And there was a sense of resting, even though we didn't know exactly how this would feel as we lived into it. And what a wonderful experience to have a profound majority of the body vote in favor of being known to the world as community of Christ, while retaining legal ownership of our name prior, Reorganized Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. So we went out of the conference 2000, and Danny has noted we did have a really wonderful and pastoral resource called by a new name that helped give some framework for the church to engage with different scriptures and questions and reflection and meditation and some hymns that were inserted into the middle of that. And I believe, Ken, I have that here. I believe your hymn, Community of Joy, Proclaim the Living Christ. Yes, it is in here along with others. And Danny was a presiding evangelist, ordained presiding evangelist at that World Conference 2000, and he wrote the closing chapter in that book. So we were spiritually and as a community of faith journeying together to prepare for the official change of the name. And something else was going on during that time. And that was the consulting firm that we connected with, Crane Metamarketing of Atlanta. And of course, the church at large was not privy to all the goings on, other than there was a really interesting logo that came out of that that didn't last long. But tell us a little bit, did you have any interaction with this consulting firm, or was the Council of 12 presiding evangelist with the World Church leadership? Were you all updated as things went on? What was your take on that?
Well, we all, Robin, were a part of it. We heard more than one presentation by Crane, including, I believe, its principal officer, and then also the woman whose name I no longer remember, who sort of was assigned, if you will, to our account. I'm sure they used business-like terms, but they could speak faith language. Absolutely, they could. And she met with us as well. Their work was very helpful in most regards. The tagline, I think you called it a logo, Toward Zion for All, was met with very mixed results, with some people strongly displeased with it, and others like myself, I remember saying, I don't have a strong opinion one way or the other. The room broke out into laughter because they knew that I typically have a strong opinion on everything. But they did help us with some things like Danny alluded to, their signage. They found the font. It was called Egalite, that we purchased so that it could not be used by any other group. And then the name Egalite went away. And it still is the font that is used on most signs in the developed world. And I frankly have seen it copied very nicely in developing nations, sometimes by hand and other times by a local sign company on perhaps a piece of plywood or some other more modest material than what we did here in the United States. They picked colors for us. They picked ways to put together stationery, greeting cards, all the kinds of things that was new to the church in terms of relatively new to the church in terms of trying to put together a cohesive branding. None of us even used the term branding, I don't believe, at that time. So I remember after the presentation, either later that day or in another session, the presider requested everyone in the room, we went around the circle, if you will, to state their opinion on the tagline and their other thoughts about the whole package that had been presented. So actually, I think most of what they came up with, we did adopt. But the tagline never saw the light of day, if you will.
That sums it up quite well, I think. Just as I say, there was mixed opinion, mixed viewpoints on the tagline. Personally, I guess I would say I was opposed to it. I just think we were going to do something that we'd already done in terms of making something simple, Community of Christ, and then having a tagline. And I, you know, having a background in advertising as an advertising manager, I understand how some companies will gravitate towards having something else they want to say. And I think the Community of Christ was saying it all. And that's why, personally, I didn't go for a tagline, even though we kicked it back and forth sometimes.
No one was thrilled with it, if I recall. There were no strong advocates for it. Danny, is that your recollection?
That's my recollection, yes. Yeah.
So I think one interesting thing of note, there was a new rendition of our church seal, the lion, the lamb, and the little child, that came out with the official Community of Christ font and the colors, and I think all of that was really, really strong and embraced by the church. But this new version of the church seal just was not well received, and not that people got upset about it, but folks really kind of came down on, we like the old seal. So what can you do with that using this new font and new color? So it didn't last long in the field, is my recollection.
That's right. That's right. The new colors were basically a blue color and a gold color. People couldn't understand what was wrong with the purple and gold, which were the church's, I guess, unofficial colors, because that was the color of the RLDS flag, if you will. And the problem was, we were trying to take a logo, the church seal, that was drawn originally in a very different era in the 19th century, and trying to make something that had a lot of lines to it work in an age where there was just too much going on. And even when we finally hit on the version of the seal that's now used, which is vastly improved from what came out around the year 2000 or so, we're not there yet. We still don't have a logo that is of the same, I'll use the term quality, if you will, as the name Community of Christ. I had hoped that the cross, with the swirling of the color out of it in a scallop type design, would become the church's new official logo. It's used, but I don't believe it ever has been adopted in some way as the church logo. And I certainly still see it on stationery. Robin, you would know more than I would. You see that kind of stuff more than I do anymore. I still expect the church seal, lion, lamb, and child. I continue to see it fading respectfully into the background.
Yeah, and we often have the nameplate Community of Christ with the official font as a standalone as well.
Is that right?
One of the issues you mentioned earlier, that I'm an amateur artist. But one of the issues with that rendering was out of proportion. The head was of the child was too large in proportion to the rest of the body. And I knew that, and I think most people could see it or understand there was something wrong here. Mm-hmm. And that's what it was.
Alrighty, we've touched a little bit on hymnody already, but I want to embrace that topic again. As we lived into the name Community of Christ, I saw a shift in our hymnody. And of course, there were several hymns featured in the preparation resource called By a New Name, including Ken's hymn. And you all have, in the current hymnal, Ken has 8 hymns and Danny has 9. And many of those, I think, were authored since the year 2000. I'd have to check all the dates on those. So talk about our tradition of hymnody and how this name and sense of identity has been sung about in our tradition, and in the hymns that you have authored, how that tradition of singing helped us cross over into this new way of naming ourselves.
Ken, I think this one is one you should start with. You are really the hymn writer here.
That's very kind of you. And Robin, I do need to confess that I'm still bitter that Danny has 9 hymns in the new book and I have 8. That's why I have to add that I have a tune. It's the only way I can justify my continued friendship with him.
Yeah, we weren't speaking up until today, as a matter of fact.
That's true. And
this is a reconciling situation. And
it's in my heart right now.
It's just pounding.
And Danny, you've aged so poorly. I had thought you would do better than this, really. It's so sad.
Well, you know.
It's the wages.
Two surgeries and one tomorrow.
Tell all on Project Zion Podcast.
We know what's going to be cut from this one by your editors. Robin, I do want to point out one hymn in particular. Well, let me back up. It is true that in Community of Christ, we are powerfully shaped by what we sing. We are also shaped by the more contemporary words of the Book of Doctrine and Covenants, particularly in, I would say, from the latest times when Wallace B. Smith was the president of the church on into Grant McMurray's very poetic writings and the very clear, plain writings of the current president of the church, Steve Veazey. Those have shaped us a lot. But from an artistic viewpoint, we're shaped even more by the hymnody that we sing. Community of Christ Sings is a terrific collection. I didn't think they'd be able to do as well as the 1981 committee did on Hymns of the Saints, because they took a rather restrained 1956 hymnal, 56 hymnal, called the Hymnal, and interestingly enough, with the gray cover. And they have the 81 hymnal was so well done and such a change from that. I wasn't sure that this particular group could move hymnody forward. Well, they did, and they did it well, and they did it, first of all, by making the book a lot larger. They had a wealth. There's been an explosion of hymnody throughout the Christian world. And because I have gone to the Hymn Society of America and Canada sessions, I've gotten to meet some of these people who I frankly idolize them. One of the hymns that we've used a lot in this name change transition is in the Community of Christ Sings hymnal, 636, I Have Called You By Your Name. Beautifully done. The tune and the words are by a West Coast American Californian named Dan Damon. He's an ordained Protestant minister, a raging introvert. And I think perhaps that is one of the reasons he's able to produce these achingly beautiful texts that he has written. His wife is an extrovert and frankly is the one that helps promote his work throughout the Christian world. And so I think the very first time we sang this in English at a world conference, people already had it. They loved it. It was one of those hymns that they loved from the minute they sang it. When you add into that, the New Zealand hymn writer, the late Shirley Arena Murray, who has more hymn texts than anyone in our particular book, the wife of a Protestant minister, we have remarkable beauty in this text and one of our strongest calls to justice and activism and the work of peace. Then you throw in some of our Community of Christ composers, such as the late Barbara Mink, I believe she passed away a few years ago, who wrote the hymn tune, Las Creaturas del Reino, The Creatures of the King. And then they paired it with one of Danny's texts that I believe you told me, Danny, you wrote quickly. And it's about giving it's about money.
Oh, yeah.
So we even have hymns. It's called Can We Calculate Our Giving? We even have hymns in this book that have to do with something that's a lot of people don't even like talking about, giving and money and things like that. And we put together two of our great artists in the Community of Christ and come up with this wonderful hymn. It also, Barbara's tune appears in another wonderful text as well. I can't remember the name of it. I'll stop talking. I could go on forever about hymnody.
This may sound a little bit, you may want to cut this too, because it may sound self-serving. I just want to give a little background in terms of, as we're talking about hymn writing, which quite frankly was new to me. When I was called to be the presiding evangelist, I was ordained by Ken Robinson of the Presidency. And here's a confession for you. I don't recall verbatim what he said in the prayer, but I remember sitting there and there was a line that came out as he was praying. And he said, you will find yourself called into areas of ministry and expression that you heretofore have never experienced. And I have to confess to you, it was not said unkindly in my mind. I said, Ken, I said to myself, that's a lovely phrase. But at my age, I know, and I don't mean this in a boasting way, I know what I do well. I know what gifts I have. I also know how I screw up. I know what my weaknesses are. So I said, I just thought, well, that's a nice phrase. Well, becoming presiding evangelist at that time, I think we had about 560 evangelists. I'm not sure what the count would be today. Well, how do you presiding evangelist as the presider over that group of men and women, how do you encourage them? You're not their presiding officer. How do you encourage them? And the only way to do that is through newsletters. And I began to write newsletters. And as I wrote the newsletters, I began to write poems, which I'd never done before. And then I began to write hymns, which I'd never done before. So, and it dawned on me, well, maybe Ken was onto something here. And I was just asleep at the switch. So it's interesting how these things mature and develop. But yes, I think I've had a bit of a throat problem since last August, and it's forbidden me from being able to sing, and that's a real loss. I hope that comes back, because we sing our faith. We sing our faith, and to sing with a group is just marvelous, a congregation, and I hope someday that I will be able to do that again. So
that is really beautiful, and what a testimony of how God continues to call us deeper and deeper into embracing our authentic self and liberating those resident divinely appointed gifts. And I just want to say on behalf of the church to both of you that the hymns that you have written that are in Community of Christ Sings, and those before, I don't know that you've written any that haven't been published. I'm sure you have.
But, oh, yeah. We have about 80.
We'll have to do a supplement sometime just for fun, right?
Sadly, some of them are terrific, but the committee already had enough texts in that theme, if you know what I mean.
Right. Yes. Yeah. But anyway, the ones that are in the Community of Christ Sings continue to bless the church across the globe. So I just want to say thank you very, very much for that.
Robin, could I add something? And this has to do with people who are listening to this podcast, and they're trying to discover within themselves some gifts that maybe have been suppressed or repressed, or simply were ignorant of them. When the 1981 hymnal was in process of being written, I remember that one of the people responsible for that put out an article in the Herald magazine asking people who had never written hymns to give it a try. And I remember I was a young man then, I remember saying, oh my gosh, I am as clever with words as my grandfather for whom I am named, Kenneth Cribble, a small town coal mining Appalachian pastor who could come up with little ditties and phrases and poems at the drop of a hat. And I could do the same thing. And I said, why couldn't that same skill just, or gift, or whatever you want to call it, just be modified enough to turn into a hymn text? I did not know what I was doing. I didn't. I had to have meter explained to me and those sorts of things. And from that came the hymn, Lord Who Views All People Precious. Mm. And I ended up the youngest hymn text writer in the 1981 hymnal. I was, to use an old-fashioned word, gobsmacked by that. Mm-hmm. But I kept thinking of my grandfather. And if there's people listening to this who think that they may not have something inside of them to give, they're wrong. They're just not discovering it yet.
Indeed.
Yeah, I had not planned to share this, but going back to the conference of 2001, when the name was changed, I was asked to give as presiding evangelist, to give an opening prayer. And I literally stumbled on it here. I thought, I try to remember what that was about. And if you bear with me, I'll just read it. Believe it or not, Ken, it is brief. It's not one of my four-page prayers. Five pages, six. Well, that's not wrong. A teenager, head bowed, fingers laced, a wooded grove, a fragile faith, a hopeful faith, a light, a voice, a call. Sunlit children laughing, young girls baking bread, beams raised, stones quarried, Kirtland's china walls, Nauvoo city beautiful stones, the sun and moon, its temple raised, its leaders slain, its dream unrealized, rumbling carts and frozen rivers, prison walls and widows' tears, fractured faith and homes divided, scattered saints and desperate years, a wounded faith, a yearning faith, a light, a voice, a call. Reuniting, reaffirming, Zion's cause reclaimed, old dome and swirling spire, lion, lamb, and child, grace transforming, peace provoking, justice reconciled, faith forever flowing, finding pathways new from sacred grove to silver spire, from spire to lands anew, stirring faith, maturing faith, fed by former streams and those who came before us, in those who gave their all, a growing faith, a flowing faith, a light, a voice, a call.
I love that. Thank you for sharing that, Danny. And that is a poignant bridge to the question about mission. How did the name change impact the mission of the church from your perspectives?
Well, I'm going to be brief here. I would say that one of the things, and it may have happened on its own, but I think the name of the church, Community of Christ, also was the bedrock in some respects, at least to me, for when Grant became president of the church, president prophet of the church, who intentionally moved our perceptions of who the present prophet of the church, what it means to be a prophet of the church. Because in many ways, he was, I think, uncomfortable with that perspective. When he moved us towards saying, we are not a people with a prophet. We are a prophetic people, which gives the whole sense idea that we are a community of faith. That, yes, we have a prophet president, but each in our own right are prophetic. And prophetic in the sense to be able to speak the truth to power and be able to be who one can be as a witness.
For me, Robin, I often, if you will, experimented with the name from a missional perspective based on whoever sat next to me on an airplane. You know that phenomenon, I'm sure, because you have traveled likely more in the last few years as a member of the Council of 12 than you did before. And my assignments were a long way away, and I spent a lot of time talking to people next to me. So I remember speaking with a woman who was a business executive. I think she was struggling with some personal issues, but she became quite captivated with what I did for a living. And I talked to her about being an international officer of Community of Christ. But I was also trying to find a way to honor our heritage, to not disparage in any way any other part of the Latter-day Saint movement, but to help somebody with her level of education understand where we fit in. And so I said to her, when she pressed more, I was going to leave it pretty much at that. She wanted more about the background. And I said, well, we are actually a part of the entire Latter-day Saint movement. We would be, if you will, the progressive or left end of the spectrum of Latter-day Saintism. And we share 14 common years of history, 1830 to 1844. At which point, upon the assassination of the founder of the Latter-day Saint movement, Joseph Smith Jr., upon his assassination, the movement split into various pieces. The one you likely know as the church based in Salt Lake City has become by far the largest of those parts of Latter-day Saintism. And I wanted to develop a 60-second way to affirm where we are in this. But what was so remarkable was after we got off the plane, she said, if you're not going to catch a flight right away, if you've got a little time, I'd like to buy you a cup of coffee. And then she goes, do you drink coffee? I said, yes, we're the ones that do. And she wanted to hear more. And she wanted to hear how this tied in and where I thought we were headed in terms of the acceptance of the LGBTQ, we didn't use all those initials at that time, community, and other groups lived on the margins of life. And she wanted to know the name of the closest congregation to her. I can't even tell you what part of the country she was in. We were in Denver Airport by then when we had the cup of coffee, but I don't remember where she was headed, somewhere different from myself. So I don't think it takes very much to be able to honor a whole lot of stuff and help people who aren't carrying much of a grudge or trying to defend something or tell us who we are, who are just open to hearing it. There's a great way to do that. And to me, it's helped people become we're better able to verbalize who we are.
Yeah. I think also, just as a quick point, that the whole concept of community of Christ has helped us, even though we've certainly transformed ourselves away from the standpoint of early years when we were the one true church. That community, that word itself says that this is broader. And I think it helps us understand that God has many names, and there are, that all religions of the world whose points is towards shalom, which means the peace and the betterment of all humankind and the earth itself. I think that whole idea of community has helped us to be more open to other viewpoints and perspectives.
Yes, indeed. Indeed. It liberated a people in both expected and unexpected ways. And from my perspective, I think we continue on this journey of fully living into what it means to be a community of Christ, and certainly has deepened our sense of interrelatedness, interconnection far beyond wherever we find ourselves on the globe. And those of us who come from nations that tend to be more individualistic, it has really pulled us and invited us into the full meaning of community. From your perspectives, do you think we have any unfinished business connected with changing our name to Community of Christ?
There is a piece of unfinished business, and it has to do with what I have respectfully called our schizophrenic views on the Lord's Supper and baptismal practices that we honor and others that we do not honor. I've not talked about this for a long time. It's kind of receded to the back of my mind, but it seems to me that while we were in the process of opening ourselves up, we failed as leaders in my era to deal fully and completely with the issue of baptism of children into the community at an early age, infant baptism, and that we would honor at the table people of other faiths, but we still put conditions on it that you, as an administrator, one of the chief administrative officers of the church, have to enforce, rather than to truly honor all of the forms and ages and rituals around the sacrament of baptism. I had a conversation with my mother one time, and she said, "Don't you think immersion is important?" I spoke pretty candidly with my mother. I said, "Mom, I don't think God cares whether we're sprinkled over the head or whether we are dipped into a tank completely or whatever. That is simply the outward expression of the inner event that's taking place in life." That was on the occasion of when two of her baby grandchildren were about to be sprinkled into the Christian community. And she still didn't like it, but she understood it at least. I think that's unfinished business, and I'm a little embarrassed that we haven't taken care of it. And now it's on you and your colleagues to help get that going.
You know, I think the reality is there's always going to be unfinished business. Yeah. Just as you mentioned earlier, Ken, about even the name of the church, which we celebrate its 20th year, who knows how we best describe ourselves in the future. And, even the pandemic in some respects has pushed us into areas that we normally would not accept in terms of our rituals, in terms of our sacramental acts. We've had to do them differently. And that in some ways that's been a little bit freeing to recognize that we don't have to be held rigid to the procedures and that we have been bound by. Basically, it comes down to this. There's a difference between a sign and a symbol. A sign merely points to the object. It tells us something. A symbol participates in that which it's pointing toward. Does that make any sense at all? It participates. And we've been, in a sense, pushed by the fact that we've had to be closed in because of this pandemic. It has pushed us to say, we must be able to see this as symbolic and let it be symbolic, as opposed to follow A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, and then it's effective. It's just as Ken said, I don't think God folds God's arms, looks over his shoulder, well, you didn't do it right, so you're not getting a blessing this time. I just think that that's kind of pushing us to say, okay, let's be creative and understand that there's a difference between grace and works, if you will, and go with what makes sense.
I really, go ahead.
Robin, I also think that we need to understand that there are people that are now deceased who we need to thank for setting the stage to this, that maybe we don't even think about being part of what we've talked about today. Part of that would be, for example, when the church made a shift, a major seismic shift in its theology, away from being based in works righteousness, earning our way, if you will, into glory with God. Work, work, work. And I'm a worker, and you, I know, Robin, are a worker, and so's Danny. But that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about where you have to work to show your worth. That switch from work to grace, which took place in the 70s and 80s and even before, allowed us, and it happened painlessly and non-legislatively, that set the groundwork for all that we've talked about today. And I'm grateful for people like Apostle Jeff Spencer, who helped with that tremendously.
Yeah.
For sure. We always stand on the shoulders of those who have gone before. And I, for one, really revel in the capacity we have as a people with a tradition of a continuing revelation, which I see as opening ourselves to God having God's way with us, sometimes kicking and screaming as we continue to do our very best to listen and understand how God is calling us to be the people of God in this time and this place, and stretching us and growing us and calling us deeper into that journey. I remember when we first accepted baptisms of others at age 8, Christian baptisms at age 8 could have confirmation only if they chose to become a member of Community of Christ. And even then, at the beginning, we were struggling, saying, did we go far enough? And I was in a meeting. I believe I was a president of 70 at that point, and one of the counselors to the prophet president of the church said, this is where we are today. This is not to say that this conversation is finished. And I saw in that how we are indeed a people who journey together with God, and we remain open to the struggle of how we're being called to be. And I really appreciate those things that you've lifted up as unfinished business, because it is profound. And it is deeply meaningful to be continually engaged in that journey and struggle of becoming.
I think the question that keeps rolling and should always roll around in our minds and our hearts is, who are we really? Who are we? And who are we supposed to be? Mm-hmm. And how can we move toward that? I think the fact that we first confronted a non-Christian culture, and we could understand who we were within the bounds of Christianity, and that was because we believed certain things. And I think there's a difference between belief and faith. Belief is a list of things. You can think of a list of things of what you believe, and on and on and on, a litany of what you believe in. But there's a difference between belief and faith. Faith is openness. Faith is the willingness to move toward that which is unknown, willing to give trust that you can become better and more helpful and who the Spirit is calling you to be. And I think that question is going to continue to roll. I hope it does. If it doesn't, we're in deep trouble.
Yes. Okay, so is there anything else that either one of you would like to share that I have not asked you about today?
Do you know I am a local pastor again after 35 years of not being a pastor? And do you know what kinds of stuff you have to know now that you didn't have to know because of COVID? Oh my gosh.
Yes, I did hear that news. News travels fast in Community of Christ. Yeah. And thank you for saying yes to being pastor again.
Well, I wish somebody much younger had said so, but the reality is in a larger congregation, our younger folks are willing to do lots of stuff, but the leadership role is something they're just not willing to commit to when they think there's other people that will.
And I would say that doing that in the middle of a global pandemic might be a little more overwhelming than when we're not in a pandemic.
It immediately, for example, disqualifies all of our teachers from doing anything other than to teach, because that's it. That's all they can do. And our medical people, that's all they can do. And that's all they should be doing. So some of us that have more time on our hands, we need to step up. But I never thought I'd learn this much about air filtration systems in churches.
Well, I can say this to my good friend. I can't. We have a lot of gifted people in the gardens, but I can't think of a better pastor right now than having Ken as our pastor. And I mean that.
This was way more than I bargained for. Robin, I cannot imagine what some of the pastors in some of your smaller congregations must feel trying to keep things afloat until we can be back together, which I pray to God is sooner rather than later.
It's hard. It's hard. And you both know how much of just deep, deep love, commitment, and service our pastors give to the church to serve and support their congregation all over the world. And it has been really tough. Really tough. All right. Well, thank you so much for being with us today, Ken and Danny. It has been a joy. I have had the blessing of sitting under your ministry many, many times and look to you both as mentors and leaders of mission from whom I have learned so much over the years. So thank you for being with us today. And we will post links and publications in our show notes to things that you have referenced today. And as always, thanks to all of you, our listeners, for sharing a part of your day with us. This is your host, Robin Linkhart, and you are listening to Project Zion Podcast. Go out and make the world a better place. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to Project Zion Podcast. Subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcast, Stitcher, or whatever podcast streaming service you use. And while you are there, give us a 5-star rating. Project Zion Podcast is sponsored by Latter-day Seeker Ministries of Community of Christ. The views and opinions expressed in this episode are of those speaking and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of Latter-day Seeker Ministries or Community of Christ. The music has been graciously provided by Dave Hines.